From KLCC Media, this is the Oregon Grapevine. I'm Barbara Dellenbach. The Oregon Grapevine highlights fresh-pressed conversations with people who are actively and passionately creating the present and future in which they wish to live. Lisa Swallow is the Director of Vision and Impact for Crossing Party Lines. Thank you so much for being on the Oregon Grapevine.
Thank you for having me here. I really appreciate it.
Start at the top and tell me, please, what is Crossing Party Lines?
Crossing Party Lines is, first off, it's a national nonprofit. So we've got people joining us from all around the country and even several other countries. We are convinced that what we really need to do as a country is reduce toxic polarization by coming together as humans, as individuals, as opposed to representatives of one party or another, voters of one candidate or another. So we create opportunities for people all across the political spectrum to come talk about issues of the day in a moderated situation, and in the process, not just learn about the issues, but also develop the skills we need to take talking politics this new way out into the real world. We also think of ourselves as community building because people connect and do build community with this common shared identity of we are someone who believes that differences make us stronger rather than create some problem that we have to solve.
There are kind of several groups doing this work. Are you working with those other groups? How are each one of them kind of different? I mean, I know you can't speak for all of them, but I'm sure you have come across other groups that are kind of doing similar work. Are you collaborating or cooperating? Or how's that working?
We're part of what's called the Listen First Coalition. That's over 600 individuals and organizations that are working together to reduce toxic polarization. We have been involved in collaborating and figuring out best practices through Listen First for the last 6 years. And because of this convening that happens through Listen First, we've been able to work with some of the other large organizations reducing polarization. Those include Living Room Conversations, Resetting the Table, Braver Angels, and many others. So yes, we do collaborate. We share best practices. We did that originally through the Bridging Movement Alignment Council that I was a member of. Recently, I was in Utah for a conference on best practices that brought researchers and practitioners together. So we can kind of say, are you seeing the same thing I'm seeing? Does this work? Does that work? So yeah, so we do collaborate with other organizations. Our primary difference is we are just focused on people on the ground and personal relationships and communities. So we're not going out and talking to politicians unless there's a specific need. We don't try to get politicians to do things differently. Other organizations are working on that. We are also the only one that I know of that is focused on regular opportunities to practice and develop the skills by talking about the issues. So many of my colleagues are doing a lot of great workshops and debates that they live stream that people can watch, but that's not making those skills a tool that we can actually draw upon in our daily lives. So we really are focused on, let's get everyone as skilled as possible.
Do you think that this divisiveness and this these need for these conversations of crossing party lines and misunderstandings are greater than they were in the past? Do you think we're noticing them more? How do you think that evolution is taking place and where is it?
I do think it's worse than it has been in the past. Several of my colleagues and I have talked about what was happening in the 80s when Newt Gingrich was really kind of drawing the line. One of the things he did, which I found so fascinating, is he changed the way Congress does business. So in the past, when you are representing a state, you would come and live in DC for most of the year, and your family would come with you. They set it up so that no longer has to happen. So most people do not come to DC to live. Their kids are no longer playing softball together. Their wives are no longer getting together to meet. And they no longer have a chance to be colleagues and friends outside of the conflicts that's going to happen as one represents one state and one represents another. So I think that the overall tone of politics started shifting back in the 80s. And then when you add the internet, where people are overwhelmed by information and suddenly having to figure out, how do I know what's true? How do I know who to believe? That got worse. And one of the interesting things that is that we've learned more and more about how our brains work. So as our neuropsychology and neuroscience has progressed, we're starting to learn not just how we work, but how to manipulate people. And of course, the first people to adopt this new information will be politicians and the media, and of course, advertising. So what's happening is they have more tools to divide us, and they want to divide us. And I don't mean this in an insidious way. If you're running for office, you want people to vote for you, not that other person. So division. If you are running a business, even a newspaper, a magazine, or a website, you want people to become loyal to you, so, as opposed to your competitors. So it's built into our business model to divide us. We now have more tools to divide us, and people are using those tools. And we as humans, as individuals, need to play catch up because we've also learned that our brains really do think in terms of us and them, my tribe, your tribe. And so we have to reset our brains to say, I can be a part of a larger tribe. I don't have to be threatened by someone simply because they voted differently than I did. So we need to recalibrate our limbic systems, which is the part of the brain that identifies enemies.
How do people come to find your workshops?
First off, conversations are our primary offering, and that is every week. Workshops are once a month, so we do have both of those. We have two ways of getting the word out. One, we use Meetup. Meetup will send people announcements of events that happen to align with the topics they said they're interested in. And while typically you only find out about those that are close to you because you have a 50-mile radius, many people will put in larger numbers and find out about things all across the country. So folks where we don't have chapters still find out about us through using Meetup to find other things or just web searches. We also advertise on social through our social media, not paid advertisement, but we post and we're on our websites and through Listen First, places like that.
So, do you curate conversations? Someone comes in and they're upset about perhaps a particular politician or perhaps an issue of the day, or is it a more general conversation about the emotions and how to converse at your Thanksgiving table with your relatives that maybe aren't the same as you?
That's a wonderful question. We try to do both. That's why we have workshops where you come to learn the skills. We even have one every November that's called Turkey in Politics, How to Be Around Your Family. But the conversations are very focused. Our members will say, hey, I think next time we should talk about this or this or this or this. We get this list of what members want to talk about, and then we have a team that will take one at a time and take this topic and say, how can we turn this idea into a conversation that allows all sides to add their perspectives, that encourages people from all perspectives to come in and weigh in on it? So that half of it is generally we're talking about this topic and why it's important now, and then we tell people some of the types of questions we'll be exploring and hope that people say, hey, I want to weigh in on that question.
It seems to be easy to kind of freak out and go, I don't want to do that. I don't want to go into this, what could be a really heated situation, and open myself up to having these conversations when that person's a total jerk. And why would I ever want to share my, why would I even want to do that? What inspires and gets people to actually go, okay, I'm going to go talk to my neighbor who I've had trouble with, or whatever the issue happens to be? What causes people to really make that step? How do you get them to do it?
Yeah, recent polls suggest that 79% of America wants to be able to talk with folks whose views are different. So we know that people out there want to do it. The question is, how do we overcome the fear and build the confidence that, yes, I can do this? It's because there's two sides to why we don't. We don't do it because we worry we'll do it wrong. We will either not have enough facts to support our view, or we will get angry. And then the other side is we don't trust them to not get angry, get vicious. And so we've got two levels of fear. Part of what we believe is that the strongest way to help, you know, the best way to help people over that is through community. So when your friends are saying, hey, yeah, I'm talking to my neighbor and he's got that Trump sign out there, I was a little worried about why, but you know, when I talked to him, I realized, you know, he comes, he's got a military background, he's worried about his livelihood, and he, for some reason that I don't agree with, he thinks that that was the best economic choice. Suddenly, he's a real person. We know why he voted for Trump. We don't just label him and treat him as a stereotype. So the community carries a lot of power. Anyone who's been coming to Crossing Party Lines a while knows how to talk in a civil, respectful way, how to be curious, how to greet newcomers. And that makes it easier once people show up. We have, every conversation is facilitated by a trained moderator who knows the signs that someone's starting to get over anxious, and they'll start calming them down. They know what is going to get in the way of someone talking. So they'll make sure that things are. This is the hard part. We don't have people modify their views, but we do teach people how to share those views in a way to make someone interested and curious, as opposed to defensive and angry. The job of the moderators to help them do that. Is that good enough answer for your question? I mean, because, you know, part of it is just letting people know what to expect when they come. And so civility, respect are number one in our advertisements, and curiosity as well, because it's really interesting. You can't be angry and curious at the same time. You can't be defensive and curious at the same time. So we really try to get people as curious as possible.
How did you come to this place in your work life?
I have a cousin. My cousin lives in rural Tennessee. And even though we spent most of our summers together, as adults, we never saw each other, except for, you know, every 10 years you hook up for a family visit or something. And in 2008, I discovered he was my political opposite. And we had a ton of fun because we were angry. We didn't have anyone to express our frustration. So we would have this very loud, boisterous discussion where we were saying, what? I can't believe you drink the Kool-Aid. And I'd say, you like that person? I mean, that's crazy. You believe that lie? You know, those things back and forth. There's something really freaking to actually be able to say those things to someone. And we had a good enough relationship, still do, that we can say those things to one another. But in 2016, when I got together with him again, I felt the stakes were a lot higher. I was just really having a hard time enjoying that kind of conversation. So I am trained in nonviolent communication, in neuro-linguistic programming, and several other types of communication. And I finally said, you know, let's stop playing. Let me apply those things that I've been trained to do to this conversation. And it just changed everything. The challenge then was figuring out how do I package that up so others could participate in these conversations. And I spent about 9 months trying to figure that out. And then in September of 2016, I created a meetup group. I was so convinced no one would want to do this that I asked my sister and my friend to pretend to be members, make it look real. But I announced Crossing Party Lines, a chance to talk across differences. And within 2 weeks, we had 50 people signed up and people offering us a place to meet. So it became real. And since 2016, all the members have contributed to what we do. So we've refined and refined our community norms and our ways of looking at things. We've added talking about civics because we found that a lot of people say, well, just remind me again, how does the Supreme Court work? Or we've adopted Jonathan Haidt's moral foundations theory to give us a language to talk about moral issues without making someone who votes differently immoral. So we're able to shift from, well, I'm right, you're wrong, I'm moral, you're immoral, to, oh, your view makes sense for who you are. My view makes sense for who I am. We're both moral. We just look at this particular issue through a different moral foundation.
Is there an anecdote or are there anecdotes that really come to mind of people who came into a meeting one way and really left a different way?
Yes. And I would like to make it clear that when we say a different way, we're talking about open to hearing other sides as opposed to changing perspectives.
Yes.
We don't want people to come and change their views. We want them to represent their views. So yeah, there have been people at our first and second meeting, this wonderful member named Joe, very, very conservative, very intelligent and outspoken. At the first meeting, he says, well, I don't know if I want to do this because, I don't know all this touchy-feely stuff is worthwhile. He stayed for the first meeting. He came for the second meeting. And during our introductions, he said, yeah, this is a different way to talk politics. And, I wouldn't want to do it all the time because I like arguing, but I think this is a great alternative to do as well. So I can do both. So that was the first one. Another one, probably 6 months into doing this work, I said, I watched as a liberal, a conservative, and a libertarian said, hey, let's go out to the bar and get a drink and keep talking. So those are some of the things that have really helped me know that this is the direction we want to be going.
The setup for the perfect joke, walking into the bar.
I know, yeah, it is. And yet that happened.
Are you optimistic as you see this work unfolding and these groups unfolding?
I'd like to say yes. I will say I am optimistic for how important this work is, and more people are adopting it, and everyone who learns to really listen to another person and listen with the goal of understanding not what's wrong with what they're saying, but what is right about it. And right meaning right for who they are, what they know, what they've experienced. I'm very optimistic for that because that skill is what it takes to have a successful marriage, to be the best parent possible, to be a great coworker on a team. I'm not so optimistic about the country right now. This is an uphill battle. I feel like those salmon swimming upstream that are, running out of steam because they got to get there to lay their eggs, but they know they're going to die at the end. Ooh, I'm not going to die at the end. Well, I am, but anyway, the media is so powerful right now. It is very, very difficult to get someone who's loyal to MSNBC or even OPB to switch gears and watch Fox News and vice versa. And until people are exposed to the same stories, not necessarily the same way of looking at them, but the same stories, because we see that there are things that folks on the left see all the time that folks on the right never, ever see. They're not exposed to it. So getting people to be exposed to the same stories and to start looking at them critically to recognize that the best thing they can do to reduce polarization is to go next door, meet their neighbor, and say, "Hey, how are you? Let's work to get our sidewalk cleaned up," or let's be in community instead of be against one another because of politics. So I'm a little frightened right now. And the harder we work, the harder folks who need division work. And they do that predominantly by scaring us. If you're worried, you're going to come back to that radio station. You want to know what happened. You want to know you're safe. So there's a lot to be scared about, whether you're worried about what's happening in Israel or Iran or other places on the global stage, whether you're worrying about your own economic stability, knowing the tariffs are coming in and you don't know how that's going to affect your prices. Worried about the environment, what's happening with global warming, perhaps, or this trend to what some people describe as authoritarianism as opposed to democracy. There are so many things to be worried about. And then you add the social change that we've been doing so much around LGBTQ rights, things like the pandemic. I mean, we are just inundated by things to be afraid of, which means we as humans are in this particular century so far have been walking on eggshells, afraid what's going to happen next, where's the next bombing going to be. And that means we're more susceptible to the techniques that are being used by media, politicians, anyone who benefits from dividing us.
Do you have either a mantra or something you tell people, or they aren't yet at the whole conversation meetup, but you see them and you say, keep this in mind. It's breathe deeply, or it's say hello, or it's whatever it happens to be. Is there something like that that either you keep close to your heart and action and perhaps share with me and with others?
I like breathe deeply, take a breath, take a pause, but also be curious. What do I not know about this person, this situation? What might they know that I don't? Help me understand.
What inspires you to do this every day?
I think just as neuroscience is helping us get better and better at understanding the mechanisms of division, and the media is using it more and more effectively, we can also do the same thing. We just have to get creative. I think the challenge we as a field, the bridging divides field, I worry that we've been kind of stuck in trying the same thing over and over again, only harder. And so I get excited about new ways to do things. We are doing things a new way by saying this is more about community than politics. You are learning about the politics and building community at the same time. I am working with a team. We have come up with a card game that anyone can play that will make it possible for you to talk across differences with someone who knows what they're signing up for. I'm also working on a book about the logic of politics, which is, what are the top logical fallacies and cognitive biases that we see, how to spot them both in ourselves and in others in the media, and just making it fun to learn about how we think, how we process. So I'm filling that with lots and lots of cartoons and jokes and things. So what are some other ways we can get at this? And some of my colleagues are doing other creative things, like one's put together a whitewater rafting trip of people who are politically diverse and letting them bond over the doing and being together. Others are saying, "Hey, what can we do to cross divides through sports?" We have one of my colleagues, Resetting the Table, and has been working very actively in Hollywood, getting writers to learn how to do a better job showing differences without dislike. And how does that work? So we're trying to hit it from lots of different creative ways. As long as I've got a new project, I can stay excited. When I run out of projects, I'm going to get worried.
I don't know, just this little bit. I can't imagine that's going to happen soon, but it could. How do people find out more? Is there a web page? Is there a place they could go to either find out specifically about crossing party lines or just this whole kind of paradigm and process?
For learning about crossing party lines, go to crossingpartylines.com. We are soon changing it to .org, but it'll still click through. Go on Meetup and learn where there are meetups happening and when. And we currently don't have a chapter in Eugene. If anyone thinks this is a good idea, just reach out to me, Lisa, at crossingpartylines.com, and let's get a chapter happening in Eugene. For other things, there's a website called Disagree Better. That's got a lot of great stuff. Listen First, wonderful. I think both of those are .org. Just start typing in reducing polarization, reducing political violence in your search bar, and you'll find lots and lots of folks doing the work.
Anything you want to add here, Lisa, about that we haven't maybe touched on, or is be kind of last words for people to hear?
I think we have bought into stereotyping the way we often buy into products. So I like Coke, you like Pepsi. Stereotypes hurt everyone. We should never talk to a stereotype. We should always speak with a human being. And what I mean by that is, let's say you're a doctor, you walk in, you see a Black person, and you suddenly jump to conclusions about what are the common health issues. And then you don't even listen to the symptoms as carefully as you should. That's stereotyping. Or if you see someone with a Trump sign, or maybe it's a ACOA or what, excuse me, that's wrong, but BLM or whatever it is. If you see something and you go, oh, now I know, I don't want to talk to that person. But no, you don't. You don't know why they have that sign up. You don't know what it is that they support. You know what, how they voted, probably. But why? What are the personal reasons? I have learned that sometimes the personal reasons are so deep, so formative, that even if I totally disagree with that person, I'm not going to try to change their mind because I know it's going to cause real problems for them. That's especially true when people are super loyal to their church, to their family members. We want to hold everyone with grace and respect and treat them as individuals. And that means look past the stereotypes, the signs, the t-shirts, and the hats.
Thank you so much, Lisa Swallow, with Crossing Party Lines, for being here today and for doing this work and keeping the conversations going. Really appreciate it.
Thank you for your show. I think it's really important.
Thank you. You've been listening to KLCC Media's The Oregon Grapevine, fresh pressed conversations with people who are actively and passionately creating the present and future in which they wish to live.